What you're hearing is the ambience of the largest congregation of people by the river Ganges. This is the Kumbh Mela. This Hindu event is observed by millions of people who culminate in various pilgrimage sites along one of the most significant bodies of water in Asia. The river Ganges originates from the Gangotri Glacier in the Himalayas and empties into the Bay of Bengal. It drains 1/4 of the territory of India, and its basin supports hundreds of millions of people. It's more than just a source of water. Indians refer to it as a mother. It gives life, purifies one's soul, and connects multiple generations. Ganges also plays a crucial role in India's economical, political, and cultural aspects of everyday life. However, this river, which is a source of figurative and literal cleansing, isn't as clean as it once was. This is the Ground Up podcast, produced by KU Leuven Sustainable Development Master students. We investigate grassroots initiatives that contribute towards achieving the Sustainable Development Goals. This week, we turn our attention to SDG 12, which seeks to ensure more sustainable consumption and production methods. This goal emphasizes the need to reduce waste generation and improve the management of natural resources. In today's episode, we take you to the sacred Ganges River of India, where the issue of waste takes many forms, involving multiple actors. We tell the tale of a grassroots initiative called Help Us Green, a social innovation project that recycles waste from religious ceremonies while addressing other social issues. We will also explore the issue of top-down versus bottom-up approaches in addressing the pollution of the Ganges, which is an intersection of environmental, political, and religious interests. In this journey, we're guided by our conversations with scholars, professionals, and most importantly, people experiencing these challenges on the ground. Since India's independence in 1947, she has become the world's largest democracy and one of the industrial superpowers of our time. People who have lived by the river in the latter half of the 20th century have witnessed the impact of India's rapid growth on their beloved river. We were able to interview a couple of locals from Varanasi, a city in the north of India, who have lived by the river all their life.
My name is Yogesh Singh. I have been staying here in Varanasi, India for the past many years. I was 2 when I arrived in 1960. I've spent my childhood, adulthood, and now old age in this very town by the river. Earlier, the Ganges was a fast-flowing river. It was clean and pure. However, all the sewage and industrial water from the neighboring industries is now being diverted into the river.
The pollution is choking Mother Ganges. In Haridwar, 29 million liters of sewage is dumped into the Ganges daily. In Kanpur, industrial toxins emitted by tanneries cause cancer, organ failure, convulsions, and death. Over 10,000 mpn of coliform bacteria is present in Allahabad and Kolkata. In Varanasi, where Yogesh comes from, 70% of people who use the water for drinking or bathing will contract a waterborne disease. This deterioration of the Ganges has attracted the attention of scholars from around the globe.
Issues with water quality are likely to be the greatest issues that we face worldwide, as well as in India, in the next century. I mean, maybe that's looking out a bit too far, but certainly in the coming decades.
This is Saya Kedzior, an associate professor at the Department of Geography and Environmental Planning, Towson University in USA.
I've been working on issues related to pollution in the Ganges River since 2006, I think.
The interest is not only related to environmental impact, but as well as for its social relevance and the cultural and religious aspects attached to the River Ganges.
The Ganga is the river of India. It is the most sacred river in Hinduism. But across many people that I spoke to, it is not something that is exclusively Hindu. I spoke to many people who said, you know, the river, it is a goddess, it is a gift to humanity. So everyone should care about it, whether you're Indian or whether you're Hindu or whether you're not, because it is this incredible gift.
The uniqueness of the Ganges contamination case lies in the paradox. The water is obviously of the poor quality, but local people still perceive it as a pure river and continue their religious rituals. Local woman Pratichi provides her opinion.
Pollution in Ganges is very prevalent. Garlands have contributed significantly to the problem. For them, it is a compulsion that if a ritual has been performed, the leftovers have to be immersed in the Ganges. If we control this habit of ours, then we might have a chance to clean up the river.
These rituals have been practiced for generations and have never caused serious problems. However, drastic changes in consumption and production patterns have led to a huge amount of religious objects, most of them being plastic and non-biodegradable, being thrown into the river. Even flower petals, which seem to be harmless and natural, are responsible for tons of pesticides released to the Ganges, which were used for flower production. In recent years, grassroots initiatives have emerged to tackle religious waste issues. One specific project, Help Us Green, has attracted our attention. It's an ambitious social enterprise that received a UN Climate Action Award in 2018 for its innovative approach to pollution from religious practices.
My father used to visit a temple situated on the banks of the Ganges for the last 30 years. It was one of the oldest temples in Kanpur. When I started visiting the temple, all I could see is people offering various forms of pujas.
This is Karan Rastogi, speaking at a TED Talk in 2017. He and his co-founder Anit Agarwal have spent the last 2 years on an initiative to relieve the Ganges of its ceremonial waste. A puja is a worship ritual performed by Hindus.
These flowers are piled up outside the temple, and it's not just the flowers. It's mixed with plastic bags, glass bottles, pattals, broken statues of gods and goddesses, and many other things. I have been discussing this problem with my friend cum co-founder, and we came to the conclusion that we cannot stop people from offering flowers. What we can stop is the repercussions to the society and the way we dispose the flowers. This is how the seed of Help Us Green was sown.
Help Us Green produces a wide variety of products, from incense sticks, vegan leather, recycled ritual products and eco-friendly styrofoam from the flowers collected. The flowers are sprayed with organic bioculum to offset any chemical remains. Till date, 11,000 metric tons of temple waste has been flower cycled, and 110 metric tons of chemical pesticides that enter the river through chemical waste have been offset. Help Us Green project can be described as sustainable, not only for its environmental benefits, but as well for its strong social and economic components. One of the specific social goals of this project is to employ women from marginalized communities.
These rural women are now a part of our enterprise. This community is so disregarded that they are not allowed to enter people's homes and their children are not allowed to study in government schools. We wanted to undo this notion and wanted to build our enterprise with them and uplifting them in the process.
Since the creation of Help Us Green, 79 women have been employed, bringing economic support to the community. It employs women of lower castes who normally earn about 10 rupees a day, about 15 cents, and now get at least 150 rupees, more than 2 USD. This project is an example of social innovation. It has facilitated the relation between the women working in the project who have limited connections with others. By addressing women's need in education and employment, it brings empowerment to this group of the society. During our research, we have learned how women felt appreciated and empowered by this project. They realized that they deserve a decent salary, social coverage, and health insurance as much as all other people. Our next expert, Lalit, explains the positive impact of grassroots initiatives in the communities. Lalit works at an NGO called Reap Benefit. He involves the community in waste management initiatives, especially young people.
So, I think the first organization in general deals with mostly young people. So Reap Benefit works with organizers who are usually in classes of 8 to 12 or 6 to 12. Why so? Is because that they are the future. So, if you influence them, they will create a much bigger impact than what maybe 50-year-old or 60-year-old could create right now. So that is why we usually work with young people to change their mindset about not just waste management, but just civic environmental issues in general. Because waste management is one aspect of it. So what we have done is that we just push them towards getting ideas, doing stuff themselves, solving, finding problems, investigating them.
We asked Lalit to share his opinion on Helpers Green. His experience working on grassroots initiatives gives him insights on the benefits of this type of projects.
So there are two things that organization like Helpers Green does. One thing about Helpers Green is that it's a very different approach to solid waste management in general. A very common perception is that you take the leaves or the flowers, you make manure out of them. But if you tell the marginalized communities in the rural areas that you can make incense sticks out of them, you can grow a business out of it, you can grow your community, there is more opportunity for a job, there's a better way for them to contribute to society, a better way to improve their lives, then I think it's a double win.
The project seems to bring a beautiful sustainable solution to one of the aspects of religious pollution of the Ganges. Still, local people question the efficiency of the project.
Unless the people themselves take up the responsibility of not throwing garlands and flowers in the river, the root cause of the problem will not be solved.
So the root of the pollution may lay in the consumption of spiritual objects, and if we change it, then we may see some real changes as well. But here we come to the question, is it appropriate and ethical to change religious consumption? Dr. Kelly Alley, the author of the book On the Banks of Ganga, When Wastewater Meets a Sacred River, and a professor at Auburn University, Alabama, USA, shares her experience and opinion on bringing change to the religious practices of people living on the Ganges River.
If you're interested in the impact that religious practices and events would have on the river, I would first caution you to think about the fact that religious practices are very important, especially Hindus of India, but others participate in those practices too. So sometimes it's a sensitive subject if you're trying to regulate those practices or events. And it usually doesn't go over very well if you enter the problem of pollution from the point of view of thinking about the religious impacts. Because I've seen on many occasions that people have rejected projects and proposals because they felt like the state was encroaching on the territory of religious institutions or even specific leaders.
Associate Professor Saya Kaiser from Townsend University in USA is concerned that Helpers Green and similar projects are dealing with a very sensitive topic of religious waste, but also draw attention away from the major source of contamination.
There is an incredible historic tendency to blame the problem of water pollution in the Ganga River Basin on people who practice worship activities. People who pray, people who leave the flower garlands, the candle boats, these effigies, these various things that can be left in the river. There's been a lot of attention to the way that those activities contribute to problems with water quality. And again, perhaps they do. So I don't mean to be dismissive of that. However, That effort I view as deeply problematic in that it takes attention away from the real and substantive problems associated with industrial effluent and the non-treatment of sewage that flows directly into the river. And so I think that that can be a very dangerous space in which an organization might end up working. So I'm not saying that's true of this organization. I'm just saying that it's it can be a dangerous location where you might be participating in what could be called a politics of blame.
Professor Keitzer brings a very important perspective, drawing attention from bigger polluters. She reflects on the capacity of bottom-up versus top-down projects to tackle such an immense source of pollution.
Everyday people don't have a lot of influence over, you know, industrial pollution, industrial infrastructure, and sewage infrastructure. And they become a very difficult thing to address from a bottom-up approach.
While resource access and scale limit the potential of bottom-up initiatives, top-down initiatives are largely entangled in politics.
So I had a lot of conversations with people who worked for government and water quality experts in the cities in which I did my research. And it's not that there isn't a desire to do these things, or even that there isn't the funding available to build a sewage treatment plant. It's that you would need so many sewage treatment plants in these cities that are largely built immediately upon the river. You'd have to tear up huge sections of the cities in order to put these on the river. You'd have to destroy people's homes and entire neighborhoods in some cases. You'd have to put pipes underground that would tear up roads, that would disrupt people's lifestyle. And in a democracy, as many politicians pointed out to me, you would be voted out of office before you were able to actually complete any of these projects. So it's not just an issue of the money, it's an issue of political will. Politicians aren't willing to, in many cases, adopt these sort of large-scale top-down solutions.
It seems bleak that tangible change driven by strong political will with the right interest in mind remain elusive. But for Lalith, grassroots initiatives like Green Benefit and Help Is Green have a more crucial role to play in politics.
You don't always get support from the government when you reach out to them. It's about convincing the government. That's why I said it's about spreading awareness, because the government, rather than listening to just one organization or one person, if more than 1,000 people or 100 people voice their opinions against something or for something, then it will be heard better. So as an organization, we support ideas. We give them contacts. We help them reach out to people. We help them reach out to the government. We introduce them to the platforms like the BGMB app, because most people are unaware of how they can reach out to the government, how they can reach out to officials. Like, some people are hesitant to reach out to.
Solving the Ganges issue is not only a matter of solving the issue with top-down approaches. It is way more than that. If we want to achieve sustainability, we can't do that from a sole pillar. We tend to forget the importance of the social side, which should be the main driver for change. In this episode, we have discussed the effectiveness of bottom-up versus top-down initiatives in cleaning up the Ganges River. We learned of the benefits of both approaches, and we conclude that a combination of both is required to achieve SDG 12 in the region. Big infrastructure projects are required to treat industrial and sewage water effluents. Although bottom-up actions like Help Is Green may lack in size and scale, these socially innovative projects foster new relationships, awareness, and empowerment, making societies stronger and more resilient. This episode has hopefully highlighted the many layers and actors that make waste issues so complex. But what is needed now, more than ever, is more conversation and cooperation between actors on both sides. As we leave the banks of the Ganges and close the lid on this episode, we'd like to address you, our audience, directly. Every small action counts. If you want to learn more about other SDG 12 and the other Sustainable Development Goals, projects, or even register your initiative, visit the UN webpage link provided in the podcast description. This episode of The Ground Up was hosted by me, Apurva Vardhan, and co-written by myself, Tatiana, Alba, Vayan, and Jin. Original theme music and editing by Vayan Lowe.